Listen, we're talking last hour with State Representative Gail Aviello a little bit about this. But children really pose little risk to others. We're not saying that they can't catch coronavirus, because obviously there's proof out there right now that they are and they can, but they're very resilient. Of course, you don't want them to sit on grandpa's lap, who's probably more vulnerable in having more serious effects than the child who he caught it from, you know. But with kids, you know, the risk really decreases if the school or school district implements good safety precautions. So you can go back to school, have the one-on-one learning, and have them social, you know, being social with their peers. But keep in mind, folks, the risk is never going to be zero. Even before coronavirus, kids were getting sick with flus and colds and whatnot. And families were going to have to look at what the schools are planning and then decide for themselves on how to proceed. To discuss this a little bit more into detail, from the Heritage Foundation is Dr. Kevin Pham. Dr. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. I really appreciate you being with us this morning. But really, to that point, our parents, do they have unrealistic expectations where they're expecting zero kids being ill? Or what's reasonable?
Reasonable is a little bit difficult when you're talking about your loved ones, especially your children. What risk are you willing to take with your own children? And that thing that, you know, that kind of, that's the thing that we're thinking about. But then we also need to, if we're trying to create policy here, then we need to focus on is the fact that the children are what's important. And as part of their daily life, they used to go to school or at least go to some kind of normal educational thing that happened on a day-to-day basis. And the risk of not doing that entails many other things, and it's going to affect basically 100% of students who aren't going to school. Whereas the risk of going to school and then catching the coronavirus, that's actually very low. So, you know, what risk is low enough? It's going to be pretty low. But the risk of doing one thing or the other thing, going to school or staying at home during this entire time, both things entail their own risk. And we should weigh both of those with as much reason as we can.
If the risk is very low, and I'll take you at your word, doctor, what are parents? Why are they so fearful? Are they? Is it that they're believing media hype, or are they just receiving some false information? What is it that the parents are so fearful of?
Certainly, the media has been extremely unhelpful during all of this time.
Sure, I agree.
You know, all right. The things that scare people are things that are going to sell the best on media. So the media has been selling up all the things that are the most scary. If you remember a while ago, there was this thing called MISC or Kawasaki syndrome that seemed to be connected with a post-viral syndrome of COVID-19. But the percentage of people who were affected by that was a tiny percent of children who got hospitalized, which is a tiny percent of all children. So this was a teeny tiny percent of a percent. And we haven't heard much about that recently. It's basically gone from the news. It's not that it's not happening anymore. It's just for some reason they're not reporting on it anymore because it hasn't happened enough. And so that when it was happening or when it was in the news, it was all over the place. It was hammered into the headlines. And that's going to terrify our parents. But, you know, that's why we're trying to put out as much information out there that children are, the risk is not zero. We should always emphasize the risk is not zero. But the risk is very low for children to develop any kind of disease or even to develop severe disease or to develop any disease at all with this virus. The risk is very low.
Now, let me play devil's advocate. Perhaps a parent has to take in the perspective of, okay, doc, you've convinced me that my child is not, should my child get the diagnosis of the coronavirus, it's not a death sentence and all of that. And especially kids being resilient and it's not really affecting children of a certain age too severely. But I'm not so much worried about my child per se or specifically. I'm concerned about him taking it home to his older parents and then perhaps even grandparents who are a little bit more vulnerable, where it could be something more severe. Would they have a legitimate point there?
Oh, that's certainly a legitimate point. That's a calculation that every family is going to have to make for themselves. If you have someone who's much older in the family, who's in the household, if grandma's in the household, for instance, that does change your calculation quite a bit. And, you know, I would still probably send my child to school. I don't have children, by the way. Mm-hmm. I would probably send my child to school, but we would try to figure out some accommodation so that, like, unnecessary contact between grandma and kiddo isn't going to happen too much. And that sounds cruel, but, you know, again, there aren't any very good answers to this. There's just wrong answers that are less wrong than other answers.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll try to do something so that everyone can have as normal life as possible again. And it should be noted that there has been, as far as I've seen, very few, if any, recorded transmissions from child to adult. Most of the transmission has been from adult to child rather than the other way around.
Oh, interesting. And many people would say the United States, or even the world, for example, for that matter, has faced greater diseases or viruses. For example, the norovirus, whooping cough, typhoid, meningitis, measles even, shingles, even like the seasonal flu. By the way, folks, your children have a greater chance of getting all of those, and it existed prior to February when we started to first hear about the coronavirus here in the United States. And yet, you know, it's even though it's been going on for years, it never, not only did it never stop our economy, it never put a stop to children going to school. Of all of those that I just mentioned, believe it or not, COVID-19, the coronavirus, is lower as far as per day cases. So what is it then? What is the fear then that parents have, or even school systems have, of opening on the first day?
Right. So that's actually a really great point. There are all these other diseases that hit children much harder, and we don't consider those to be worth stopping the economy for. But I will say that the main difference here, the legitimate fear here, is that if children manage to infect others, mm-hmm. then sending kids to school would be pretty disastrous if they do manage to infect others on a high level. And a study has found that school-aged children seem to have a higher viral load in the nasal passages. That's significant, but it hasn't. But again, we haven't found a lot of documented cases where children transmit it to adults. And so since it's not happening very much, we don't know if this is correlated to actual infections. And we really don't see it very often. So that is the one legitimate fear that I would see. But again, we haven't seen much real world evidence that this happened.
So there's not much evidence of children transmitting coronavirus if they have it. There's fewer known cases of a child transferring it to an adult. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
Wow.
And
this
data includes is from all over the world, from all the places that haven't closed down their schools. You know, Denmark, Australia, and France, Germany. Places that have not closed down their schools, or at least reopened their schools later on, have not found children to be important transmitters of this disease.
That's incredible. That's really outstanding news. So then I guess why? What is the fear? And I am a parent. And of course, our number one job as a parent is to protect our children, bar none. So then what is it then? Why are parents so, I don't want to use the term worry warts, but maybe they're over concerned on something that they really need not be. What is the cause of that? And more importantly, how do we change the way of thinking to facts rather than fiction?
The fear really comes from the fact that it is a scary thing. This is a new virus, and it's swept through the entire country, and it's claimed a lot of lives by this point. So you know, the fear is real. But I do think you're right. It is overhyped, and that's because it's overhyped because of it's the main thing that's driving pretty much everything happening in the country right now. You know, we're not having a normal election campaign cycle because of the virus. So it's driving everything, and we're always thinking about this virus. How we move beyond this, though, is to remember two things. One is that the risk to students is very low, as we've been talking about. The other thing is that if you don't resume schooling, some kind of normal schooling, then you're disrupting this part of a child's normal life. Even if you're normally a homeschooler and then you have these homeschool co-ops, even if that's the case, then you're still preventing students from having this sort of normal interaction on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And that will have real tremendous impacts to social development and everything else moving forward. And that has, and the risk of that is much greater than the risk of coronavirus.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. Folks, we're speaking with Dr. Kevin Pham from the Heritage Foundation. I want to delve into that, if you don't mind, for a couple of minutes. You know, I remember being in school, and I think one of the things that helped me to learn were having my peers, having my buddies around me, where it's like if I wasn't getting something from the teacher, but the teacher was busy or I just didn't want to seem like a dodo, a buddy of mine could just with really quickly in terms that I understood a lot better as a young child could explain it. And I'm like, oh, okay, now I get it. You know, kids can learn from each other, correct?
Right. Especially little boys tend to learn a lot from one another rather than from directed teacher down to student learning, especially through a screen. I don't expect our little boys in the country are doing very well with screen time learning. It's just not a natural way of learning. And social interactions helps build social skills, and it does help with the educational process as well.
If I'm a teacher, am I more in favor of in-classroom learning or home online learning?
Well, we're hearing from a lot of teachers that they don't want to go into school, but I think that's really their fear is unnecessary. The median age of a teacher is well below the age that you're at severe risk of mortality or comorbidities with COVID-19.
Right.
So most teachers would be fine, even if they do catch the virus. But again, students aren't transmitting it to teachers very often, if at all. And, you know, the school should be implementing some kind of measures to help mitigate the spread of the disease. So all of these factors together should make schooling one of the most safe activities to restart.
Yeah, I've talked, and just knowing teachers myself, and for full disclosure, my wife is an elementary school teacher. She teaches first grade. And I can tell you this. It's much more time-consuming and much more difficult to teach online, especially to youngsters. This may not be relevant if you're in the high school age, and certainly not college, because there's actually online courses that you can take in college. But for young children and having their parents be available to help them log on, and if there's portals involved, and maybe that in-person instruction that would have to compensate with the absence of the actual instructor, or in this case a teacher, you would need some kind of adult supervision, you know, to help guide that youngster. It poses not only greater challenges in forward teaching, in other words, not retro teaching lessons that have already been taught in person and just revisiting them as exercises, but forward teaching, it poses a lot more challenges and eats up way, way more time. In other words, where a lesson could take, if you're teaching a classroom of 20 children, where a lesson could take just a couple of hours because you're, or maybe not even because you're reaching the entire classroom at the same time, sometimes, and I know there's Zoom out there, but a lot of times children can't all tune into Zoom at the same time. There's only one computer in a household, and families have multiple children, but oftentimes these teachers are now teaching that very same thing throughout the day over and over and over again, where once upon a time in a classroom it would take, you know, an hour or so. Now you're spending all day teaching that one simple lesson. I'm sure you follow what I'm saying, right?
Right. It's just not a natural way of communicating especially with children who aren't normally on the other side of the screen like this for communication. And a lot of communication too is body language. And so you're not getting this kind of interaction, the social contact. All of this is just stripped away when you're doing it from one screen to another screen. And it's really an abnormal disruption to a child's life.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And I think you mentioned something a moment ago that I think a lot of people need to take into deeper consideration. And that is, you know, the socialization aspect of it, not only with their peers. I mean, although that is important, but bonding with their teacher in person, you know, having some one-on-one instruction in person, as well as collaboratively, classroom-wide. There's nothing that can truly compensate fully, 100%, for that, other than being in the classroom and having live instruction from your teacher.
Exactly. It's just a normal part of a child's development is learning how to appropriately interact with, one, their peers, and two, with adults. You know, people of different age groups, they need to start building the skill of talking to someone who's older than them, because the social context is different, and differentiating that from talking with their peers. Those are two different things, and then you need to be able to practice these interactions on a daily basis, but we're not being able to now.
Yeah. And just to be clear, Doctor, looking at the big picture, it's far more dangerous to keep children at home and have online learning. Well, I guess that's what it is. It's online learning. It has far more deep ramifications to do it that way than to going into the classroom, correct?
Right. At this time, from what we know, then the risk to students of coronavirus versus the risk to students of maintaining this isolative existence is much, the risk of the isolation is going to be much greater than the risk of the coronavirus.
Yeah. There's always big picture and little picture. And you got to, I'm a big picture kind of guy. Dr. Kevin Pham from the Heritage Foundation, I really appreciate your time.